Doctor.
It's clobbering time.
Engage. Shazam!
Chevron 7, lock.
In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight.
Kawabunga.
Welcome to the Heroes Asylum, issue 43, the magnificent 43. As always, I'm one of your co-hosts for this lovely journey into the asylum. I am Thanatos Kane, and I am here with my bumblebee to me, Optimus Prime, the guy who makes this show go, the heartbeat of it all, the mother box himself, Mr. Captain Mike Jones. Sir, how
what
are you this
is going on?
Summer?
I'm doing great, man. The bumblebee. I'm the bumblebee with the voice, not the Michael Bay one that mumbles a lot.
Not the horrible.
Yes, sir.
That was a weird choice, wasn't it?
I was like, what do you mean you can't talk?
It's funny because the beginning of that Bumblebee movie, he had a voice, and I think it was by, who was it? He was in Teen Wolf for a while, and then he did a couple movies. And I thought the voice of him was pretty good. I was like, okay, finally he's got a voice. And then they went back to that horrible radio box voice.
Yeah, but then again, we wouldn't have had the touching moment of, you got that touch.
The touch! Yeah. You got the power! You know, it's funny, I think we were talking a little while ago about the music I play at work, you know, because I have a day job, because sadly the Heroes Asylum doesn't support us all the way, not yet, but in the future it will. A couple weeks ago, I was playing the entire soundtrack to the Transformers 1986 animated movie, and, I work with, let's just say I work with ethnic people, and the looks on their faces when they're just dropping orders and hearing this music, like, what the hell is this guy listening to? And then, like, I had the Junk Robot theme playing or Dare, that other song. So,
That's Dylan O'Brien actually does the. He was in Maze Runner.
Dylan O'Brien. That's
a
good choice.
A underrated series of movies, by the way. I think those are kind of fun.
I agree. And he's pretty good in Teen Wolf as well. And then he had another movie with Michael Keaton where he was an assassin. So Scott, what is his name? Dylan O'Brien?
Dylan O'Brien, yeah.
Keep an eye on him.
Yeah. He's just coming around. He's a young guy, 28, so got a future.
You know, he was in the running for Spider-Man, too. But I think he's a little bit too old to be Spider-Man now.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't look it. He could be one of those ones, you know, that pulls off the, you know, the I'm in my 30s and I can, you know, that he can be the part of the 90210 cast, you know. Rest in peace, by the way, since they have been officially canceled.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, I figured it was. Yeah, I didn't expect that renaissance to last too long. I mean, it was a good idea.
Well, it wasn't really a show. Was it more of like a satire of what it, like the actors making fun of it?
I didn't rewatch when it came back, but
I saw it with my dad, and I think what it was, the premise was they were going to get the show back together, and they were the actors trying to get a show back together.
Playing themselves.
Playing themselves.
Then, yeah, I can definitely see that getting canceled. If they went back and like, redid the
I
scene.
Liked it, though. It was weird. It was during, like, the production of them trying to get back together, they had this killer who was trying to, like, you know, he was, like, all stalkering all of them. Like, I guess he was going to try to kill them all or something.
Really? Okay, I got to go back and watch
this. Dude, you have to watch it. It's strange, but I think it'll fit up your alley. Speaking of fitting up your alley, I think we need to go to the, admissions ward.
Alrighty, sir. Here we go.
News from the admissions ward.
Yes, yes, yes. As always, the lovely admission ward. And as always, we have news for you fine folks, you fellow inmates in this asylum. And we're going to start out with a very sad tale. Stephen Amell has worn the Arrow costume, Mike, for the very last time. He posted on Instagram. He's finished filming Arrow. He's finished filming the Crisis crossover. So this is basically the end of Stephen Amell's run on Arrow and on the crossovers. Any thoughts, any best scenes that you remember him by? I mean, he's basically he's one of the granddaddies who began this whole Arrowverse, and it's going to continue to be called the Arrowverse even after he's long gone.
I mean, he was a different Arrow. I mean, we all know, especially us diehard sweaties, we all were, I know I fought it at first because he wasn't my Oliver Queen. He was different. He was the Batman to us because he was a lot of similar Batman stories. But I wouldn't hold your breath. You diehard Arrow fans out there, I got a feeling he'll be back. You know, I don't think that's the last time he's wearing that suit.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think maybe future crossovers, maybe at the ending of this Arrowverse, you'll see him in some, you know, some other massive crossover, maybe like a cameo.
Yeah.
But I don't, then again, I don't know what other crossovers they could do besides Crisis, because... And who's the phone call, by the way?
No, it's not. Sorry, I was scrolling through. The funniest thing, it's the Crisis, commercial that came out from Boost Mobile today.
Well, thanks.
I was scrolling through some of my notes, and it popped up. I was like, oops.
Well, that's one ruin for the fans. I guess we'll have to do that soon. But yeah, his last time suiting up, I guess we'll see him in future films or crossovers or cameos. But unfortunately, his stupid kids are going to be in the world, which that's a whole other bag of beans that I don't want to.
I look at this as the moment in Avengers. I think it was something that Bob Iger said earlier this week at the Disney. They had a stockholders meeting, and he made the comment that this is post Avengers time. And that's kind of how I look at this moment. This Crisis will be the end game of CW. If you look at the time that it's taken for them to do this, is about the same time, 8 to 10 years.
Which is crazy when you think about it.
This is bringing everybody together, from every report we get. They're bringing in Smallville cast. They're bringing in 1960s Batman cast. They're going everywhere. They're even, from rumors we've heard, they're pulling in the DCU. They're looking at, the cast of, Shazam and the movies of bringing them in, if not the actors, but clips.
Yeah, stock footage.
This is their end game. So everything post this is going to be something different. It's not going to be our stuff. And you got to realize a decade has gone by, basically another generation in a way. I know generational numbers aren't decades, but when it comes to the TV world, that's a generation. And we are going to get the more social friendly Arrowverse. Same thing with the Avengers and the MCU. We're getting the more social friendly one. I'm not saying I'm on board with it. I'm not a happy camper about some of the stuff I've seen, but unfortunately that's the route we're going in. We have to look forward to other things that are coming down the road instead.
Yeah, there's some newer things that are going to drop eventually. I'm sure you'll see Ted Kord, the real Blue Beetle. I'm sure you'll see Booster Gold. I'm sure you'll see characters like that eventually come along.
Let's hope.
Maybe a better, well-done version of the Legion of Superheroes than the horrible version they did on Supergirl, which I have a lot of issues with, tons of issues. Except for Brainiac 5. I thought he was okay, but Saturn Girl was terrible. Mon-El was okay, but like just the whole way they made the Legion of Superheroes, they just made it like a bunch of, excuse my French, a bunch of pussies. Like, they just weren't the Legion that I'm used to. Like, even the animated version made it a little more badass. And, like, this version was just like, hi, we're just here from the future. Just, no, you can't do that. It's, like, too nitpicky, too, like, mom and dad-ish. So I just...
Well, wasn't the Legion from Smallville about the same vibe? I think they were a little bit cooler.
They were way cooler.
Yeah.
Those were the
only Legion I'm really looking forward to, man, is... is in Young Justice right now. After I saw that Legion ring, I was like, oh, what's next season looking like?
I think they'll do that justice as long as they don't repeat what happened in season 3.
Young Justice, no pun intended.
Oh, that horrible ending. Anyway, let's go on. Move on to the next item of news that we have. Loki, the Disney Plus series, along with the was it a Vision Quest? No, WandaVision.
WandaVision
Quest is
that's a wrestling movie.
Is it? I thought it was a Viking movie.
No, Vision Quest. It was Matthew Modine.
I thought it was the Matthew Modine.
Yeah, Matthew. Yeah, but it's a wrestling.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. That's a full on. My stepbrother was a wrestler in high school. I kind of followed his lead, and I also wrestled in high school. And that was our movie growing up, was to watch that. Really good, good movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Check out Vision Quest of Matthew Modine, because I totally forgot about that.
Yep.
Anyway, Loki. And along with that, we'll tie into the Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness movie. So basically, those two Disney Plus series are going to tie in to Doctor Strange, which is, it kind of makes sense. We knew about the WandaVision because it was announced that she was going to, Scarlet Witch was going to be in that movie. But Loki being tied into that, that's new.
Yeah, that is new, yeah.
Which leads me to believe this is their way to weave Tom Hiddleston back into the MCU.
Well, the second I saw him blip out, or not blip out, sorry, I hate to use that term, but the second I saw him vanish in the movie, I knew, I was like, okay, that's his rebirth right there. They don't even have to bring him back into any other movies to say he's continued. I figured that was their way of going, okay, now he's going to go to the TV show.
And it's not really a cop-out, because the cop-outs that Marvel has done is like with Coulson when he's dead. Well, no, he's alive. Oh, but then he's dead again. This one's a little bit different. It's a different version of Loki traveling the multiverse. So I can accept it.
But my question is what happened to the Loki that's supposed to be in the timeline? Because now that Loki changed. But he couldn't be dead. Because then that negates everything that happened afterwards. So that's where their time paradoxes come into play.
Well, according to Bruce Banner in Endgame, if you recall, he said that what necessarily happens in the past does not happen in the future. So if you want to relate, because this is their version of time travel.
Yeah,
so
their version of time travel. I'm just saying,
their version of time travel is a little confusing even. But so I guess they're going to introduce that, and you know, it's a way to bring that, like you just said, it's a way for bringing Tom Hiddleston back. You know, he's a popular character, everybody loves him, so why not bring him back? And this is the way they're going to bring him back. So. Yeah. Apparently this doctor, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, well, with the Loki movie, from my understanding, it's him jumping through time, going into different places, you know, the 70s. I think that was like the big one that they showed from some on-set things that they were trying to do was him, like, and it was like in the 70s style.
I heard some rumors too that he's going to be, you know, as you said, he's going to be jumping through time, that maybe he jumps through the 60s and he meets up with the Fantastic Four. And maybe that's how the Fantastic Four get reintroduced to the MCU, which I wouldn't hate. I mean, I don't want to see the Fantastic Four right now, considering they're damaged goods. But, you know, it's just a thought that was thrown out there in the ether, so you never know.
Yeah, if they're going to bring Fantastic Four, bring them in. I think you said this months and months ago, bring them in and then throw them into, didn't get lost in space, but they got lost in the quantum realm. And then they came back. Yeah, And I still see John. Krasinski from The Office. I still see him as Reed right now. I think that if they're going to do it, he should be the one to come in.
And his wife, bring him out of the tag team. You know, and get him at a little discount. So hey, but yeah, that should be coming soon. And I guess that film is going to be in 2022. Loki starts at 2021, so we got a while. But something to look forward to. Anyway, next on our agenda, Ironheart and the Thunderbolts are rumored, and that great word that we love, Mike, to be in development at Marvel Studios. So they're not being made, but they're in development, which can mean they could be lasting there for 5 years on the cutting room. Like, hey, I have an idea, and it may never come to pass. But just a thought that Ironheart and the Thunderbolts are just an idea. Interesting. I mean, they're basically using all the caveat in Marvel that they have. So why not use the Thunderbolts? Why not use Ironheart?
Yeah, but really, why? I mean, that should be the question. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. I think Jeff Goldblum said it best, or Dr. Ian Malcolm said it best. Your scientists never stop to think of whether they should do it, and that's my thought on it. I don't think Ironheart's never been a big property, and I understand in the Marvel universe. The first thing anybody says when I'm like, well, yeah, that wasn't a big property. It wasn't, you know, really big in the comic books. They use that against, you know, with Jane Foster as Thor. You know, it wasn't the best one, but they're rolling through with a movie. First thing that they throw in our face is a Guardian of the Galaxies. Well, it wasn't big. It was a horrible. Yeah, it was, but it also was a very interesting group of characters too. Ironheart and Jane Foster as Thor they're not interesting at all. I mean, it really is.
I think it's more for the Thunderbolts side of it. I think Ironheart is just, the Thunderbolts is more of the interesting team. I think that's the one that I'm looking forward to. Like, are they going to do the General Ross Red Hulk? I mean, that's the one I want to know. Are they going to introduce all those characters? Because the Thunderbolts are basically like the Suicide Squad for Marvel. That's the way I look at them. So you could do a lot of crazy things with them, depending who you're going to have in it. And how are you going to do it?
Who's the pilot behind the project? That's the big one.
You know who should it be? Like in the comics, I think Norman Osborn was in charge of Thunderbolts for a
while. Oh, no. When I say pilot, I meant like who's directing? Who's the lead?
Oh, the project.
And I'm cool. Sorry about that. Sorry. I should have been more specific. Yeah. No, I think it's with that one, it's more like Guardians in the hands of somebody else wouldn't have probably succeeded. Guardians in the hands, you know, of... Shit, just drew a blank there. Damn it. I just drew a blank.
You draw a blank?
Yeah. Who did the Guardians?
James Gunn?
Thank you, Gunn. Yeah.
James Gunn. Okay.
You know, Guardians, like I said, Guardians in the hands of James Gunn, it's gold because of his mindset. His personality is quirky to begin with. Mm-hmm. And so that if you get somebody that maybe has more of a drier sense of humor, a different kind of personality and different mindset about how they look at the property, it could have failed like horribly.
Oh yeah, that's like Quentin Tarantino if he did Guardians. It would be like a total murder mystery. It would start with the ending as the beginning, and then Star-Lord would be a murderer. Like
that's why like that rumor that's been kicking around with Quentin Tarantino and Star Trek. I'm like, please don't do that.
You know, I heard some things that script is finished and they're ready to start casting. It's a little rumor I heard. Like my brother lives out in California and he knows some people who know some people, and I heard they're going to start casting.
Oh, man, I just...
Yes, so that's what I heard. I mean, I don't know if they're going to use the J.J. Abrams cast or what he said they're going to start. Apparently, the studio likes it, so who knows?
I hope I like it? Yeah, no, that's...
Not what I want, but hey, they're going to get it nonetheless. Yeah,
I think William Shatner should use it for toilet paper and call it a day.
He should record an album like he did. Rocket Man. Yeah. Well, we're going to come to the portion of the show where we're going to talk about something that Mike mentioned earlier, and that is, of course, Crisis. Ah, yes. Once again, we didn't do one last week, but we're doing a little spot this week, as always.
Yeah, because I don't think there was much on it, though. I mean, I think the shows all were just kind of...
Yeah, they're basically they're almost done filming. They dropped a little teaser trailer, which you mentioned. Well, actually, we heard over the air a little while ago. Basically, a quick little synopsis trailer show basically Kingdom Come Brandon Routh as Superman. And we found out also that Kevin Smith is going to host a Crisis on Infinite Earths after show. And I think out of all the people you could have to do it, you had to get him to do it. And I think it's beyond perfect because he's like the biggest supporter of the CW shows. I mean, literally, if you look at any of his videos, he's crying at the season finale of season one of The Flash, like literally crying. So if you want anybody to support the CW and have an after show by Crisis to geek it all down, I think Kevin Smith is your guy. So, perfect.
Yeah, and he's directed Supergirl and Flash, I believe. I know he's done a few on Supergirl, but I think he did one or two Flash episodes. Actually, I think
he's done more than that. I think he's done like maybe two and two on the both shows.
Yeah, I think, yeah. But yeah, it's, and I think there was one that was like a straight up, like when they wrote it, because he's even mentioned, like, he's like, when I go to direct these things, I don't do anything. He's like, these guys are on autopilot. I can't change their characters. I can't change certain things. But there was one, though, I think the last episode he did for Flash, very heavy Kevin Smith influence because I guess the writers went more dialogue based, and there were a few inside jokes too to the Viewaskew universe.
And I think Jason Mewes was in an episode too. I think he played a security guard or something.
Yep.
So he's the perfect guy to basically break it all down. I'm sure he's going to be crying also. So I'll probably be crying as well. You know, it's. And we basically only have a couple weeks away. I believe it starts December 8th. The first episode airs on Supergirl.
Yep.
And yeah, so not too far away from Crisis now. So we should be there shortly. Yep. So I can't wait for that. And other news on the agenda from Disney Plus. Moon Knight has named the Umbrella Academy series creator as the head writer of Moon Knight. I like the Umbrella Academy. I like season one, where it went. I like the way it ended.
Yeah.
I thought they hit a home run with that. So getting him to be in charge of Moon Knight, I'm on board with it. I mean, especially what he did with a property like Umbrella Academy. I think we you were the one who started raving about it, and then I started watching it, and then I picked up a couple comics on them, and I just thought, like, wow, how come I've never read this before? It's just so different, but so up my alley as well.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. I think that director will be perfect for Moon Knight, especially from what we had read a couple weeks ago about their concept that they were going with being very cerebral, in that it was like you were going to be dealing with somebody with multiple personalities in a way, but also dealing with the supernatural and the way Umbrella Academy was, because you had those different characters. I think that and the fact that it also captured the dark side too in Umbrella Academy, I think he'd be perfect for it.
And I think one of the things that hit a home run was the beginning of that series was Ellen Page's character, who I thought was just crap at the beginning. I'm like, who is this? She's boring. She's bland. And then you find out during the duration of the season, each episode, and basically they character build her. Like, I should have known better than shitted on her the first couple episodes. But as the episodes kept going on, you kept seeing like little nuggets here and there of her character. And then you find out, you know, who she is. I won't spoil it for you. I haven't watched Umbrella Academy yet, but she becomes something that I never would have thought. And I like where it's going for season two. So if this guy's going to helm Moon Knight and bring those same kind of sensibilities to the character as we talked about, because I think they're going to do kind of an amalgamation of the origin of Moon Knight. They might mix in the Egyptian stuff with the multiple personalities. I think he was a billionaire as well. So I think you have a guy who can basically, you know, put all those things together and make a, you know, coherent story.
Yeah. And I think, and one thing I think they really need to work on is in the, just because they have to, it's a very like fine line to work with, is to avoid the Batman comparison. There's always been that comparison that Moon Knight is the Marvel version of Batman. But, you know, personally, I think Punisher or Iron Man is more Batman than the Moon Knight, other than the fact that he was dark.
Yeah, I never liked
that. Was it? I was like, really? It's
maybe the costumes are sort of similar. I mean,
white.
But
he's in a white costume. And
yeah, I know, but I'm just trying to draw comparisons. Yeah. I mean, I'm picking at straws here. I'm just basically trying to think how they would compare the both.
Yeah, to me, it was always a cross between, you know, Punisher and Iron Man was the Batman of, you know, the Marvel universe. You know, but the dark side and the vengeful side of the Punisher, but you got the money side and the cool toys and gadgets was Iron Man.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
And also, folks, I will be doing a special show on Tuesday. I have taken off work Tuesday. My boss knows why I'm doing it, so I'm not in fear, because I know her daughter does listen to our show. I will be taking the day off to just delve into Disney Plus, to just check it out, see it. What does it offer? What's good? What's possibly bad? Everything, all the check marks are checked for me so far until I turn it on and see how it is. So, my plan is I'm going to go ahead and just like do a quick review kind of towards the end of the day. I'll definitely do a review on Mandalorian, and then just a review of the app and the features that are on there. And hopefully we can maybe get an added segment into the show of things that are on there, because, you know, they are going to have the Mandalorian. They are going to start dropping those newer, the Marvel shows eventually. But, you know, its first launch is Mandalorian, that we do know. But just the other shows that they're going to have on there, the Clone Wars are going to be on there. Gargoyles is going to be on there. So there's a lot of hardcore geek stuff in there, not just the Disney princesses.
Yeah, so can't wait. I will look forward to that on Tuesday. Sadly, I won't be on there with you. I'll be otherwise preoccupied, but definitely check it out, guys, when it comes out. Captain Mike is very knowledgeable when it comes to Star Wars, so yes, and all other things streaming, so look forward to that.
I cannot wait to start the Clone Wars over again. Sorry, I just have to.
Yeah, I'm gonna do the same thing. I think I left off, what did I leave? I think I stopped at season 5, because I saw clips of season 6, but I think I'll have to restart it.
And Rebels, and too. Rebels was the toughest one for me to catch. I'll actually be able to delve more into Rebels. I've been hit or miss. I've seen it, but I haven't seen it consistently. I can't say I've watched one through. I've been, you know, 1, 4, 6, and yeah, like I've missed a few things here and there.
It's like, you know, there's always those filler episodes. Oh, yeah. So some of them, especially the chopper episode, I don't think you want to see that. That's good stuff.
Don't mess with Chopper.
Anyway, last order of business here in the asylum. Batwoman and Supergirl are praised by GLAAD for their LGBT representation, which is interesting because, you know, sadly, the LGBT community doesn't really support the show, considering the viewers and the ratings, especially if you watch a lot of the trailers, who are basically crap on the show, especially Batwoman lately.
And yeah.
Not by the crowd that we would think would crap on Batwoman. It's basically by their own people. So it's just, oh, by their own gender or race or whatever. So just,
yeah, there's two YouTube people that I watch, and I used to watch one of them. I dropped because I just, like, it was just the poison was so just bad. I'm like, wow, that she's at least out there. Granted, yeah, it's not the best show in the world. The acting, like, I know that was been one of my complaints, is one actor acts like they're working, you know, trying to get an Oscar, and the other ones, you know, acting like they're just in a high school play. But one of my favorite ones is that Star Wars girl. Yeah, she's usually very pro LGBT, and she just really just not a big fan. And another one, Mecha Random, she bashed the heck out of that one as well. So, but I think it's great. I think the representation's good. It's not heavy. It's not what I thought you and I thought beforehand. And we've said this before.
No, not at all.
I thought it would chase people away. I really did. I thought that this was going to, them doing what they were doing was going to chase us away. But it's not.
It's just like, I think somebody mentioned it before. It's an interesting part of the Batman mythos to put into a show that doesn't have Batman in it. But Batman is basically there, but he's not there.
And yeah, he's the shadow in the background, really.
Yes, he's the shadow in the background. He's mentioned at the end of every episode when, you know, Kate writes, which I think is a unique thing to do, having Kate Kane write the journal to Bruce Wayne, like saying, hey, I'm doing this, I'm borrowing this. And I broke this, I borrowed that. And I think you know what's going to happen. You know, hopefully the show goes on for a while. There's going to be a payoff because, you know, and I think you have to admit now, somewhere down the line, Bruce Wayne is going to show up. I mean, not season 2, not season 3, not season 4, maybe 5, maybe the ending of the season. But he is going to show up somehow. And I think he's going to interact with Kate. And it's going to make it that, you know, that episode much better because they built him up. I mean, you don't have to build up Bruce Wayne. We all know who the hell he is. But as far as the Batwoman mythos goes, as far as just going forward, you're building that Bruce Wayne character. Like, what has he done for the past 3 years? Where has he been? You know, what has he been doing? Where's Alfred, as you've said? Where's Nightwing? Where's Robin? What happened to these guys? Did he take it with him? I mean, like, what happened in all this stuff? There's a lot of questions, and hopefully they can be answered down in the future.
Yeah, let's really hope so.
Anyway, that's the ending of the admissions work. We go from one section of the asylum to another section of the asylum, and that is going to be a section that we like to call Legends of the Long Box.
Legends of the Long Box.
Da, 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 da. Sorry, I like that song. Anyway, I did a lot of reading this past week. Yes, Thanatos Kane does read. The God of Death does read himself. And I have five. Yes, I got five pulls for this week. Usually I have three. But, you know, I had to overcome for some people who didn't actually read this week. But it's okay. I take my job very seriously, folks.
Just not a lot. Not like I normally do.
We're going to start off with one I think Captain Mike can comment on. That is Hellblazer 1 with Constantine of the Black Label of DC. This is one that Captain Mike has been talking about for a long, long time. I think ever since they dropped the announcement at Comic-Con, I believe. This is the first one with Constantine. There's going to be plenty more. The issue is interesting. Basically a reintroduction of Constantine. Basically of all his stories kind of like fixed in, you know, basically if you don't know who Constantine is, you get a clear understanding of who he is, through different versions of him, through speech, through madness, through psychology. It's just a lot of things they throw in there. It could get a little bit messy sometimes, which I thought in some panels it did, but otherwise it's Constantine. And, you know, I think it's a good first start, good foundation to go forward in Black Label. And, you know, I want to see where it goes now, because you've laid that foundation of Constantine and, you know, his other, you know, I wouldn't say versions, but, you know, other types of John out there. So it's an interesting start they have out there. Don't you agree, Mike?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, what they started with I thought was great. Like you said, it was this is a perfect example for the new viewer, new reader that wants to get into it, especially with the change of going into the Black Label. And it's it's just a rundown. It's a quick clip. The best way I can say is it's a clip movie or clip comic book. We've seen those clip TV shows, and they're usually just a rundown of what happened over the season. And that's kind of what this was for Constantine. He didn't delve too much in, but it gave you enough to know what his history was, maybe the background characters. And went from there. I mean, it didn't cover everybody. I think because we know who people are, we saw certain people in the background. Definitely saw Zatanna in the background, but I didn't see an interaction with Zatanna. Yeah. But I definitely saw a Zatanna reference. And so there's those things. I didn't see any references to, like, the Justice League Dark, which...
That'll come later, maybe.
I believe this is a breakaway from that. I as much as I love Justice League Dark, I think you even said it before, that wasn't Constantine. That wasn't the real, true Constantine that we all know. So I think hopefully this will break away and go back into the more dark style. Because even the artwork, much darker. Splashier, yes. Very splashier. When I say splashy, I don't mean bright and colorful, but very, like, smudgy in the artwork design, which I can... be more specific on that style, but that and very, very dialogue driven too. Which I really liked.
And they probably nailed the character of Constantine. As we all know, some people in life who have like a mental illness, they hide sometimes madness or pain with humor, and I think that's what Constantine does pretty well. And he even said it himself. He has a quote in the comic, which I had to write down. Madness, like all roads near Rome, like a black hole in a bikini. Life is entropy. And I think that kind of sums up the comic and the character of Constantine and himself. So it's just, he's just one of those guys. I think, he can be snarky. He can be kind of a dick, but deep down inside, the dude cares. He has a lot of issues, and he just, and he carries a big burden. He's almost like a Batman, but not quite, because I think he carries more of a burden. This guy basically sent a girl to hell.
Yeah.
And watched her die and to become a demon. And eventually the girl comes after him. If you don't know what that is, read the version of Constantine where he goes to Newcastle. That's probably his biggest arc that he's ever had, but
yeah,
he's a dark, morbid character, and he has a lot of guilt. And I'm just fascinated to see where they're going to go in this Black Label, and I think it's a good pick by you. And going forward, hopefully, we'll see more of this.
Yep. And actually, if my book that you and I will tag team that one right that we just did, but also another book I read this week it's also a Black Label book, and I think Black Label's really doing some interesting things. But this isn't just Black Label. This is also, it's called Hill House Comics underneath the DC Black Label. And it's basically their introduction to a horror-based comic book run. And it's some really interesting. This is just number one. I think they had a total of 5 books coming out. But it's ran by, the Hill House Comics is ran by Joe Hill. He's doing the writing, art by Leo Max. And Dave Stewart are on this. And I read Basketful of Heads. And it is a 17-plus book. I mean, this is straight-up adult book. And it's basically this young lady comes into contact with a mystical axe. And at one point, she is confronted by some bad men, and she takes the axe and chops her head off of one of the one of her attackers. And what happens with this magical axe is their heads still remain alive. And so part of her journey she has to go through and kill a bunch of people to get her boyfriend back who's been kidnapped. So what she has to do is basically walk the earth right now collecting these heads, but these heads are talking to her. If you remember from the Batman Last Night comic book, how Joker was talking to him, the Lantern Joker, it's almost very similar in that aspect that she's walking around and these heads are having conversations with each other too. Like, you're sitting on my ear, get off my ear. Just kind of like weird things like that. It's really interesting. It was a book that surprised me. I did my normal, what I do is I look at the the DC, what is DC dropping? And I just grab everything from DC. And this one just caught my attention. I was like, basket full of heads. What is that? And I was like pleasantly surprised at what it was. And that it's also, again, part of the Black Label. And there's another one coming out, I think, from Black Label, The Last Gods, which is very kind of a, it looks like a Conan-esque kind of story. So I'm really looking forward to seeing more of what's, like I said, I've been a big fan of Black Label so far. And they're coming out with not just your Batman and Superman dark stories or King Constantine or you know, restarting Vertigo. They're doing some other lines that I'm really interested in. And but I think you should check out the that one. It's the Hill House Comics is what it is. It's that that's the name of the line inside of Black Label.
Oh, very interesting. I'll definitely have to check that out. I'm all about the horror-based comics.
Yeah, but, and I thought there was five that they were coming out with, and each one's a different story, different dark side of the world. But it's, like I said, very dark and very, but also had a bit of a humor to it. Like I said, when the heads are talking to each other, she has to deal with
it. You know, when I think of heads talking, besides the Joker Lantern thing, which I want that for Christmas, by the way, Thanatos Kane at Instagram and Twitter. I think of that movie Hellboy, the first Hellboy by Del Toro, when he goes into the graveyard and captures that Russian sort of soldier demon, and he has the head on the back of his pack, and he's basically cursing him out throughout the whole movie. One of the finer points of that Hellboy movie is that basically Russian demon head cursing out Hellboy.
Oh, Ivan, yes.
You know, Ivan, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, Ivan was great.
That's the first thing I thought about when you were saying, like, oh, he's probably like Ivan. So.
Yeah, there. Let's see. There is Basket Full of Heads, Dollhouse, The Lola Woods, and I'm trying to remember what the other ones are that were coming out. Yeah, there were some other. Yeah, there were a couple more ones, and like I said, they're all from Joe Hill. So it's something to, if you guys are into horror comics, definitely check that out and see.
Interesting. Well, we'll definitely have to check that out. So I guess I'm next.
Yes, sir.
Since I have most of them. I got a new one for you, and it's one of the ones I really want to talk to you about. It's called Shades of Magic. Shades of Magic. Let me get the thing right here. Sorry about that. First of all, the artwork in Shades of Magic is fantastic. It's like the glossy type of pages. Looks like they put a lot of money into this comic. It's an indie comic, anyway. And the best way I could describe it, I could use three words. Magic and pirates. Magic and pirates. Basically, magic is used by these pirates to influence the town that they're going to attack. Before they get there to clean it out. Basically, what they do is, like, these pirates, they have, like, a magician on board. And the magician will influence, like, the townspeople to say, hey, you know what, get the hell out of town, or, like, give us all your goods, or to get all your women naked, or something like that. And they basically clear the town out before they even get there, so when they get to the town, they can pillage it easier. And basically, the main crux of the story is a guy, and his name is Prince Maximum of Marsh. Now, Prince Maximum Marsh is the only magician that has won the trial of four deadly magic trials. So basically, he charts a boat. He goes. He's trying to save cities from these other pirates who have magicians also. But there's an oncoming evil. We don't know what it is. It's not really mentioned in the first issue. Basically, it's in the intro to Maximum and the other pirates out there in the world of the magic that they have. But it's like a Pirates of the Caribbean. And if you combine it with a darker version of Harry Potter, that's what you get with Shades of Magic. And so far, I dig it because, as Captain Mike and the audience knows by now, I like all the weird stuff. And when you have a combination of magicians and pirates and magic, you hooked me. And first off, once again, it's done by Titan, and the artwork is fantastic. That's the one thing I can say. If you're just a big artwork guy, check it out. I mean, put it in the frame. The cover's beautiful. Like I said, it's just not a lot of dialogue so far. We're just getting an intro, but I dig it, Mike, so far. It's really wacky and weird, and it's right up my alley.
And what was it called again?
It's called Shades of Magic.
Shades of Magic. I'll have to look for that. And it was, who'd you say was the, it came out by?
This is done by Andrea.
No, I meant the publisher, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Titan Comics.
Titan, okay. I'll have to take a look and look for them.
Yeah, check it out. It's not that bad. It's like I said, like all the wackiness and stuff I like, basically is put into this comic. And yeah, to me, can't wait to see where it goes. Next on my list is King Shazam. Yes, King Shazam from the Year of the Villain, the Year of the Villain Infected. Basically, this premise takes place after Batman Superman 2, which Shazam has been infected by the Batman Who Laughs. Basically, the Batman Who Laughs cut him, put some of his blood into Shazam. The beginning of the comic begins with Billy Batson basically acting like an asshole. Total dick to his adopted parents, total dick to everybody. Doesn't kill his adopted parents, but you can see where it's going. The premise of the whole comic of this issue is Shazam is trying to find a new family that is worthy of him. So he's fighting Thor. He's fighting Atlas. He's fighting Ares. He's fighting all these gods, and basically he beats the hell out of all of them. Until somebody from his family comes along to try to convince him, hey, Billy, this is not quite the thing to do. Something happens, which I won't spoil, which leads into the next comic, but I think having a dark type of Shazam has added a new element to it, because Shazam is always known as the big cheese. He's the big goofy guy, you know, he's a little kid. But this one, you know, ever since he's been infected, different element. It's always like we always say, if you add a different layer to a character, it's almost like I love the dark Superman that was on Smallville when he had the red kryptonite. I thought he was more abrasive and like, hey, he's more of a badass. Kind of like what Shazam, I think, needed. And I think this push in the direction that he's going to, at least for now, I dig it. And I think you should definitely pick up King Shazam 1.
Yeah, I was looking at that one. But again, I'm behind on that run with the Batman Who Laughs. So I was like, oh man, I really want to read it because it looked cool. Because I thumbed through it a couple pages. I'm like, man, it looks really good. But I was like, I'm going to be lost. I'll wait. That is one of my ones where when I get some free time, that's one of the books one of the series I want to start from the beginning, reread Metal, and then just go from there and pick up the story.
I think one of the things when you read Metal, and I understood why you didn't like it, totally understand it from your viewpoint, I think if you looked at Metal from a different perspective,
like
you would like it more. Well, I wasn't going to say that. I don't hate any of you cannabis lovers or CBD oil. But anyway, if you want to do that, that's fine. But I think you have to look at it from a different sort of point of view. That's the way I would use in the Obi-Wan words. It's not a linear comic by any stretch of the imagination.
Not at all.
And I'll admit that. The story is by any sense makes any kind of sense. But I think if you look at it for the characters themselves, it would make a lot of sense. And the Batman Who Laughs is definitely the star out of that Metal series, and basically branched out to his own miniseries, which was actually pretty good. And I think the character himself has room for a lot of growth, and maybe down the line he could be used. Who knows? But I think this one is pretty good. And I think
him now, really, aren't they? I mean, that's the whole point of this story, is I think they're laying the groundwork for more. I mean, right now it's, I think with the, like you and I were talking about the dark multiverse, like, they're laying the groundwork right now. I think that's going to be the big story arc for next year. 2 years ago was the Metal. They laid the groundwork with Metal for the big story arc that's been going on this year, the Year of the Villain.
Year of the Villain, yeah.
And so I think they're all intertwined, and that's why I wanted to go back and watch Metal and then read to his miniseries, because right now that's what's taking place in the universe now. And I think, like I said, I think the groundwork for the Dark Universe is going to tie into where the end of this run of this story, this massive story arc, is the beginning to the big story arc with the Dark Multiverse, because they're all tied in, you know. Because there's really been no reference in the Dark Multiverse comic books. I don't know if you've. I think you said you were able to read the Batman one.
Yes.
Oh, so in the Superman one, all you see, the only connecting thread to those two, is Tempest. That's it.
That's it.
That is all, but I think in time, every once in a while, as Tempest is talking, he'll flash. There'll be like, it looks like a little flash panel of the Batman Who Laughs. So I think like what we're going to see is
you had a small panel with him
and the Robins, and that was it. But I think that's a hint. I think this is a hint that as this story that you're reading now ends, this story with the Dark Multiverse picks up. I think they're kind of going to be tied in together and run next year's major arc for all of DC, which I'm cool with that.
Me too. I think it's next year is going to be the Year of the Hero, hero, if I'm not mistaken. So I think that's what I read. And yeah, because the heroes eventually have to win. But that's King Shazam 1. I think you should definitely check it out at your local comic book store. Or for you locals here, Acme on 1792 and 434. Check it out. Anyway, next one I have is Bloodshot issue number 2. I think I talked about Bloodshot a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, you did.
This is issue 2. We're just going deeper into the Bloodshot character. If you ever read the variant of the original Bloodshot, basically the same premise, more story. He fights off, of course, Black Bar. Not the candy bar, but the actual Black Bar organization, which basically creates soldiers just like Bloodshot. You get not too much origin story, but more of just him, more Black Bar, more of why they want to stop him. There's an interesting moment in the comic as well when Bloodshot basically tells the general, like, hey, look, you know, I know you want to kill me, but make sure that the citizens of this country who are starving get this food. You know, if you want to kill me, that's fine, but, you know, make sure they get the food. And there's a nice moment in the comic where the general comes back and they're fighting each other. In the midst of killing each other, he says, hey, Bloodshot, guess what? I know we don't like each other right now and we're trying to kill each other, but I made sure I got that food to those citizens of that country. So they're being well fed, which I thought was a nice little touch. You have more fighting, not too much story. It ends a different way than you think. And basically the next issue is going to be more about the Black Boar organization, but it's solid. Not too much dialogue, not too much story yet, but, you know, a lot more action panels. But I think we're getting somewhere. And I think if you read the original variant comic, it's almost like a take on that with a different little twist.
Very good.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's Bloodshot 2. So check it out, like I said, at your local comic book store.
Nice.
And speaking of local comic book stores, my last one for this week is going to be, speaking of local comics, is going to be something that I think you liked and I liked and we talked about last week, and that's White Widow issue 3. White Widow issue 3 basically, you know, picks up where it left off the last issue, where she defeated one of these superhuman metahumans just like her. Goes more into story about her mom, about her dad, about this organization that's chasing her, about her friend who's helping her out. Basically, has this suit, almost like a symbiote type of suit that she could change into anything. She could get like pretty dresses. I'm sure girls all around the world would love to have any type of clothing, and she can do that at will. She tries to confide in a certain hero of this universe, and things don't go the way you think it's going to go. But like I said, it's a continuation of the story. Nothing great. I mean, the artwork is once again on par, but I like where the White Widow is going. It shows the vulnerability. I mean, like I said, we talked before, the White Widow is a very similar character to Spider-Man. And I think that's sort of the way they made her out. Like, she's blessed with these powers, doesn't know what to do with them quite just yet. She's thrust into a world that she does not understand. Sound familiar? So you're just finding out the more of the growth of this character of Garcia as she goes along, finding out her power. She has a friend, and we're just going from there. So we're just building story, we're building character. Nothing great in this issue, but it's just a continuation of what we started.
Nice. Yeah, and that's the last one that they have. I think they're still making the number 4.
Because
I thought it was only, I thought they only had like a 1, 2, 3 released right now.
Yeah, it's only 3 right now, so I don't know what issue 4 is going to come out, but I like where they're going. It's interesting. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's a lot better, and I like that.
That's good. All right, good.
So that's all my stuff for the Legends of the Long Box. Or no. Do you have something?
I had read two of the X-Men, continuing the X-Men series. With the New Mutants, New Mutants number 1. It was okay. I was never a big New Mutants fan. I think the one I read, Excalibur I reviewed last week, was never a big fan for those. So it's a little different. I like the flow of the you know, House of X and the Power of 10. I love the flow of those books, and I thought that's what we were going to get, but it looks like they branched off and gave these other books. I mean, it's a lot of books to do. I mean, they're talking X-Men, Marauders, Excalibur, X-Force, New Mutants. Yeah, so there are at least 6 to 7 books a month that they're trying to release, and I understand it's a lot of work for one person to do, but so that, like, the artwork on the New Mutants was a very rough, harsh, you know, drawings. not very smooth. I think that was one thing that kind of took away from me. Wasn't really into the story for them, because really that one follows the New Mutants follows more Starjammer and their journey. Basically, what they're doing is they're trying to journey with the alien race that the X-Men work with. Shit, I just drew a blank.
Oh, the Shi'ar?
Shi'ar, thank you very much. I wanted to say Chitauri, but I was like, no, wrong ones. Yeah, but the
Shi'ar. You're close. Shi'ar, Chitauri, no. Tomato.
Yeah, they're on their way there. And of course, Starjammer, they're the pirates, so they can't get too close. So they have to drop them off at a certain point. I understand this is the beginning of the story, so I get that. Then the next one was X-Force, which took us back to Earth. That one I thought was really cool because in the stories of the X-Men, you know, they're on Krakoa, this new planet or this new island, and it's there to provide for the mutants. It gives food, it gives shelter. There are certain areas in the island that, you know, are more geared towards swamp, you know, people that want to be around the swamp areas. Others, you know, like Logan, Logan's running off in the jungle by himself, and so is Beast. And this one starts with Beast and Logan running into each other, and there's a predator on the island, and that wasn't supposed to happen. The island's supposed to be there to protect them, and so you come to find out that's not what's happening, and also that there's a group of people that want to try to land on the island to try to stop other mutants from coming in. So there's starting to be more pushback from the human race against the mutant race now. And they have an assassination that takes place also in this story. And they're trying to find out what happened. You get introduced to finally Domino's back in this one now. She was kind of a major point or a plot point to this book. But there is a major, yeah, like I said, major assassination, which I was shocked with, because I mean, we're on book one and this is a big person to assassinate right off the bat. But if you've ever read the House of X, Powers of 10, those books took place now, 10 years from now, 100 years from now, and 1,000 years from now. You know that one of these people isn't there in the future. You know that person's not there 10 years. So wasn't too much of a shock. It just shocked me that it happened so early. But again, you know, just keep. I'm enjoying the X-Men. Like I said I've been away from the X-Men for so long. I'm happy and I'm like enjoying the. I literally look forward to seeing what's, you know, dropping. I think X-Men 2 comes out next week, so we'll see the second one.
I think from what you have said the past couple weeks in the long box, especially about the X-Men, especially about the new origins for Magneto and everything that's going on, I haven't read an X-Men comic book in a long, long time. Now I want to read these, because I think what they're doing is they're twisting the origins up a little bit, which I like a lot. They're making Professor X a lot different, Magneto a lot different, all the other characters a lot different. And I like when they do that. It creates more interest in me, because you get tired of the same old, but when you tweak it just a bit, but keep it true to the nature of the character, that's what I like. Just don't want to delve from that. And that's why I'm digging this X-Men run. Now I'm going to have to officially start buying some X-Men. Thanks, Mike.
The origin, be broke. Yeah, another one. but the origin is still the same. You know, Magneto still went through his childhood. Xavier still went through his. There's just a moment when Moira MacTaggert meets both of them. And because from one of the reviews I gave before, she is a mutant as well. But her ability is regeneration. It's in it, but not regeneration, but reincarnation again and again. So if she dies, she goes back to her birth and does her life over again. So she remembers what she did in the first life and what she did in the second life and so on and so forth. So that's the one twist to this whole X-Men universe, is it's still the origin up to the point where Moira meets Xavier, or when she comes into contact with Magneto, because at one point she goes to see Magneto because she's like, all right, I spent four lives trying to go work with Charles and his dream. It ain't working. And his dream is going to be a failure. Let me go to the other side of the coin. She goes to Magneto. She spends a couple of lives going, okay, his way's not working either. What the hell am I going to do?
And I dig that, because for so long in the X-Men comic books, it's basically about two characters if you think about it. I mean, in the background, as we talked about before, it's about Magneto and Professor X. Like, their friendship, their ideology is so different. Like, which way do you go? And the thing I like about the X-Men movies and the comics themselves is both characters have a point. They have a point, and you see that struggle. Like, hey, he has a point. He has a point. Every single comic, every single run, every single arc, they both have points. But after a while, it gets tiring.
Yeah.
And long. It's just like, you know, I'm tired of this. Let's do something else. And I like the fact that, you know, this character is like, you know what? No, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm tired of you preaching to me. It's not working. I'll figure it out myself. And that's what I'm digging about this new X-Men run. And I'm going to lose so much money buying these comics.
Well, hopefully don't wait for it before you do it. I would wait for the graphic novel because they have to be releasing a graphic novel soon for House of X and Power of 10. Get those. Those are each 6 books for House of X and then 6 for so you're 12 books right there. So wait for the graphic novel to come out for those and you can get them all in one shot. And then you can go ahead and like kind of start picking up the books because then they're just doing one X-Man, one, I think it's like I said, I think it was X-Men, the Marauders, the Starjammer one. I think it was like total like 6 books a month that they're dropping. But like I said, the Excalibur one, I wasn't too like a keen on. Like I said, the artwork was very strange and different. I don't know. I have to look up and see who the artist was on that because I was just like, it was very pinky. If you know what
yeah,
I mean.
Yeah, well, very glossy.
Not glossy.
Or just like very what's like the art more deco the, type.
You know the charcoal. You know charcoal painting.
Yes,
that's very much what it was like. It was very charcoal-y in how they.
Oh,
yeah. So it was like a little weird on the eyes.
That sounds like Brock. Brock. That's a type of medium of painting or artwork. That's Brock. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Brock. Not post-impressionism, but. Jesus, we're getting to art class anyway. I gotta stop. But I think it's Brock or something like that. But I don't like that artwork either. It's just
It was like I said. It just
like
it,
Shades of Magic.
It just threw
Shades
me off.
Shades of Magic had the best artwork. So Titan, but I have to check that out.
Yeah, Hickman, Brisson, and Reese are who the people are on there. Just like I said, but when you go to look at the other books, you'll see definitely a standout difference. Yeah, but some people may like that style. It just threw me off.
Yeah, it's all about difference of opinion, so that's why we welcome them to the asylum, because we're all different inmates in here who have different opinions, and we're all brought together just like Voltron, you know.
So. the five mini lions, nice.
five mini lions, but
So, we have to have a talk about Titans this week.
let's end the long box first, and then we can go to Titans.
Well, I never did make an outro music for long box, so we're
there. You never did?
No. So okay, so here we go.
Okay, we're done. Thanks. And that music was brought to you by Captain Mike Jones, by the way, at heroesasylum.com and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. All right, let's talk about Titans.
Okay, yeah.
Can I start? Can I start?
Oh yeah,
I
want to start. Knock yourself out, yeah.
How can I put this? I think. The grievances that you have with this episode are the same that I have, not to the level of hatred that you have. The first thing that bothered me big time wasn't him being in prison. All right. I kind of understood that. Wasn't like Gar and Connor being captured. Didn't have any issue with that neither. I guess Cadmus is the main antagonist of the season, not Deathstroke, which is strange. The issue I had is the origin of Nightwing. And I think we've talked about this ad nauseum, even before Titans. I think we talked about this in many Knights of the Winchester.
I think our first episode before Titans, before we even started talking about Titans, when we did our favorite comic books, our favorite characters, that when I brought up Nightwing, it was one of the things I said.
And you brought up the origin, which was like, you know, I hope they do it that way. The way that the origin, and I'm sorry, Mike, I'm going to have to break one of our rules. This is spoiler heavy. So if you don't want to listen, what's going to happen in the next, I'm going to do a little countdown in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Don't listen for 5 minutes.
All right. No, don't listen.
I hated the way the introduction of Nightwing was done by this cartel from Mexico. Basically a drawing written on a jail. Oh, this is the bird that's going to save us. That's it?
Yeah.
there's no effort into that, basically. He's a chalk drawing in a jail?
Yeah, that it was...
That's the origin of Nightwing?
That it was some, like, Aztec or you know...
Aztecian that, yeah. bird? It's not like Superman saying, hey, this guy was... I mean, okay, I get it. You couldn't have Superman on there. I understand that. Maybe you couldn't have Batman on there. I get that, too. But there's another way you could have done it.
You, but you Why could've, do you it? You could have had Bruce there. We have a Bruce Wayne. Why couldn't they have, like, a flashback of... Of that, of, you know, of him, them talking about Nightwing and Fires. Yeah, Nightwing and Firebird. Something. But they, yeah, that was.
It was just odd. Like, I get the jail stuff. That was okay. Like, some of it. And the other points I think you're going to bring up, so I'll leave it to you. But that was my biggest qualm of the episode. Like, and I was watching it and I kept thinking. Captain Mike is gonna hate this.
Yeah,
and I knew it. I knew it from the start when I saw that drawing on the wall. I go, oh boy, this yeah. symbol looks very familiar.
Yeah, I did the same thing. And I looked at it. He, I was like, oh.
And then
don't
he started preaching it, and then I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah, I had to stand and up to watch that moment. When I saw the bird, I was like the same way. I was like, that bird looks familiar. Oh, don't do that. I stood up. I had to do. I was like, you're gonna tick me off.
I was watching that after I got off of work, so it's about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm watching this thing. I'm like, please don't let it be this. Please don't let it be this. And then they went there. The episode ends. I'm like, oh boy.
I mean, we're going to get Nightwing. That's definitely going to be the intro. He's going to be there to break them out of Cadmus and, you know, get everybody back
together.
Which is fine.
It's just the way. You know what? I'm going to leave the rest of the episode to you because. You have more qualms with this episode than I do. So, yeah. Captain Mike, it is all you.
So, for the uninitiated in Nightwing and maybe those that have missed our prior shows, Nightwing, the name Nightwing, was a Kryptonian superhero from Kandor that Superman, when he went to Kandor at one point, him and Jimmy dressed up as these characters, and that was their name. And Superman told... a young Dick Grayson, the legendary stories of Nightwing and Firebird. And I'm sure the names came from the Mexican birds because those are both very, you know, what's the word? I don't want to say Mexican, but South American culture for, you know, their gods. Completely get that. I see that. I was like, I get that. But when it came from, it became more important to me, I think, as somebody growing up and seeing that, it was a representation that's Nightwing, who was influenced by Batman and Superman together. It was an amalgamy of this. And I think it just like crapped on the whole legacy of Nightwing and of Superman by doing it for the drug cartel. Just horrible. My other issue, and I sort of did it as kind of poking fun at you as well, because you and I had an argument that Batman should have known Dick was on the phone when he called. And I'm like, so he should have known he was on the phone when he called, but he doesn't know his ward, who's the ward of one of the richest men in the country, probably in the world, has been put in jail on the news, in fact, and nobody knows it. But yet the great detectives of the Titans and superheroes or wandering around with their thumbs up their ass, wondering where Dick is, and nobody decided to, I don't know, check social media. Check that big, cool computer they got in the back room. Look at these things. Those are tools as superheroes. So that was my other issue was like...
And they're computers made by Bruce Wayne.
It's a bat computer.
That whole tower is a Bat Cave 2.0, and you couldn't figure out he was in jail?
Yep.
Are you... Even an idiot could have figured that out. And Gar, who's basically, they made an idiot in this show, he can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Donna Troy can't figure it out. I mean, come on.
Yeah, my biggest disappointment with anything DC Universe so far is that episode. They have nailed everything else. They have done great on the show.
The whole season.
Everything.
And it's strange how this season mirrors Young Justice season 3. It's so crazy because we have discussed ad nauseum Young Justice Season 3 so much. And I told you at the end of Season 2, and you did as well. You were like, oh, I'm excited for Season 3. I love where they're going. Look, it's Darkseid. Look, it's Vandal Savage right there. Oh, we're going to get the new gods. We're going to get Mother Boxes. Yeah, we got Mother Boxes. We got Father Boxes as well. But we didn't get Darkseid. We didn't get the new gods. We got sort of the new gods, but not really. They were there. And at the end, I just hope Titans can hit the landing on this, because this episode frustrates me a lot.
I think they will. They will. I mean, our biggest issue is how they presented these things.
Like, exactly.
I think afterwards, when they're going to nail it. I mean, we're going to see him finally in, because we have what? Is that what? Another three episodes?
Three episodes.
So I think they're going to nail it. I think next episode's going to be him getting the Titans back together, going to everybody. I'm sorry, I screwed up. I'm an idiot. We'll probably see Bruce again, because he'll probably go to Bruce going, hey, listen, I really screwed up. How do I get these guys back together? What, you know, I need help. And, most likely Bruce will go, hey, well, I've got something special for you, by the way.
And probably and Bruce he makes will give him.
Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen.
If he does that, yes.
And then the last two episodes are going to be the two-parters. I think part one and part two, you're going to have them going into Cadmus, probably running into Deadshot Deathstroke. I think because he just kind of wussed out all of a sudden.
Yeah, that episode was strange, how he just went to his house and, like, you have to go to, you have to get your sins forgiven. I'm like, you were such a badass. The first eight episodes that you basically just gave him a free pass?
And then he's hobbling around like a fucking old man. I was like, what the fuck is going on here?
Well, what's going on?
So, I think that's what, hopefully, would be the smart thing. Have him and Mercy sort of team up and leave it at that at the end of the cliffhanger for next season. Will be, them working together and maybe seeing a bald head sitting on a chair or something. And
you know what?
Smallville ended.
I was just going to say that. It's funny you just said that. We think alike, which is so great. This is hence why the Heroes of Silent podcast was born. I was just thinking that, like, they escape from Cadmus. The Titans are formed. The end of the season, they're just screen watching a big bald head, and Luther is going to be the main antagonist for season three. I agree with you 100%. I see that coming. But the one thing I would say for Titan Season 3, which, I like Titan so far. Season 2 has been better than Season 1. But the one thing Doom Patrol did, and the one thing Swamp Thing did that Titans hasn't done, is they have not gone balls to the walls. And what I mean balls to the walls is go all out. Swamp Thing in Season 1 went all the way. And they got canceled. But you know what? It was a satisfying conclusion. Same thing with Doom Patrol. If that was it, satisfying conclusion. Season 1, Season 2, a little bit better. But they haven't just gone all out. And you have all this material. You have all these characters right in front of your face. You can do so many things. And I think Titans is holding back. I just think they're holding back. Yes, we got Bruce Wayne this year. That's great. But I want more. And they have a lot more to give. And I'm not saying the main DC characters. You don't have to include the Trinity at all. You have other things you can do. You could throw in there. And they haven't done that.
I think they're holding back because of...
Yes,
because everybody's waiting for him to become Nightwing. And then I think that's when they're going to go balls to the wall. And I just think they've been dragging their feet a while. Season one season to wait, that's perfect. He should have been in Nightwing suit three episodes ago, I think.
I agree. Like, right after Trigon came, hey, you know what? I figured out who I want to be. And you can have, like, an off-camera talk with Superman. Like, yeah, who do you talk to? Oh, I'll talk to the big blue guy. And that was it. And he made me realize some stuff. And that's it. And then he's Nightwing, and you go from there. But it's just a long, drawn-out thing of Nightwing. And now that we find out where he gets the Nightwing thing from, it's just...
They could have literally had him on top of the Titans Tower. You don't have to see anything. Oh, it's a wide-angle shot from across the city. All you see is as they zoom into the tower, you see a blue blur or red streak go flying out to space or wherever up in the sky, and it zooms in on Dick, So you know, okay, he just had a talk with somebody that just flew away, leaving a red streak. Wonder who that is.
Yes, you could even do like a little special, like, who are you talking to? Oh, he just left. He made me realize some stuff.
Yeah.
That's it. You don't have to spend any money on that.
Yep.
You don't have to have Superman there. I know that's a main thing, like, oh, we have to include... No, you don't. Name drops are perfect.
Shit, what they could have done, because Connor has Superman's memory, it could have been a talk with Connor.
Yes!
I mean, he's got his memory, so...
They even said it. Like, Eve, his mother, one of the scientists on Cadmus even said it. Like, hey, you were born from, like, the greatest hero in the world, the most evil man in the world.
Yeah.
So you have both sides.
Yeah, you have their memory, because there's some things that he remembers.
If he's sitting there, and Connor's like, so, what do you remember about the blue guy? Like... Well, I remember this one time you know, on Krypton, there was this dude or a guy, and he was saving people's lives. Oh, do you remember the name? Nightwing. That's it!
Yep.
And then, like, a trigger hits, and then boom, and you go, it's just,
yeah.
God, we should be writing this show. It just makes me frustrated of what, I mean, I like where the season is going. It frustrates me, this last episode, so much. Like, not as much as you, because I think you're more pissed off than I am, but it just, the intro to Nightwing, and I'm not a Nightwing fan. I like Nightwing. I'm more a Batman fan, as you know, but, you know, he's one of our family members, and Nightwing is the guy who's going to be, you know, eventually is Batman down the road. But he's just treated with such, just like, you know, whatever. For 8 episodes, he's been hanging around in a hoodie and a t-shirt fighting crime.
Yep.
He should have been in costume already. Like, really? He's not Dean Winchester. He stole his jacket, basically, and like oh, I'm going to fight crime. And all he needs is the Impala and a baseball bat. It's very frustrating. I mean, I guess it's the life of a comic book fan. So.
Yeah, it is. It is. But like I said, I think DC's been doing a good job. You know, knocking things out of the park. This was their one slip-up.
Yeah, I'm not going to say blip. I will never say the word blip ever again. That word blip shall never be mentioned in the asylum ever. All right? It's called the decimation. It's called the snap, not the blip. Never mention the blip. All right? Please. That is the worst thing. It's almost like the Peter Tingle. No, it's the spider sense, not the Peter Tingle. All right?
Oh, it's the God. Peter Tingle.
I mean, the Peter Tingle. Mike, really? The Peter Tingle? The Peter Tingle?
Hey, we all have a Peter Tingle once in a while.
Yeah, but that's different. I have my Peter Tingle, like, you know. Well, that's to be continued. But anyway, I guess that's it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, yeah, we're gonna end it with Kane bitching about his Peter Tingle, and yeah. And I think you can get a prescription for that.
Yeah, they do. But anyway, speaking of prescriptions, you should definitely subscribe to our Twitter and Instagram pages at Heroes Asylum and HeroesAsylum.com. Go to our Facebook page also at The Hero Asylum. We take a lot of questionnaires on there, polls. We'll be putting polls on there pretty soon for our next midnight, well, actually, movie review. We're going to do, not midnight movie review. So hopefully it's going to be soon. I don't know what we're going to do quite yet, but I think we're going to get back to basics.
Yeah, we still are releasing the Star Wars series. Actually, for you guys out there that we've been talking about forever, this is the week we're dropping Star Wars A New Hope with Kane, myself, and Steve-O. That will be coming out on Wednesday. So keep an eye out for that, guys. And, you know, we'll definitely be dropping that one. And then it's a fun little journey on that one.
It's an interesting one.
So, but yeah, make sure you guys do check out heroesasylum.com. You can find everything for just Heroes Asylum, but also Midnight Movies, and you can find all of our subscription pages.
Yes, so you know, as always, that we say, get to the asylum, kids.
Peace.